The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
Few authors can boast a career as prolific and successful as my next guest. With numerous bestsellers and millions of copies sold worldwide, Linwood Barclay is renowned for his masterful blend of character and suspense. And I'm happy to say he's on the line to talk about his latest book, which is called I Will Ruin You. Linwood, good morning and welcome.
Hello, Pat. How are you? Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you back on the show. I was on holiday recently and I read I Will Ruin You. And it was one of those books, and it reminded me a bit of Bonfire of the Vanities, which I've talked about on the program before, where I'm saying to your principal character, don't do it. Don't do that. Oh, please, no. Don't do it.
Well, I'll take a comparison to Bonfire. But I know what you're saying. And when you're writing a thriller and you've got a protagonist who's in a mess and you know that people are thinking that, you've got to find, you hope, convincing, compelling reasons why he keeps doing what he's doing. And, you know, otherwise, you kind of, people are going to leave, people are going to walk away. I think in this one, I mean, which is a book about a teacher who's in a terrible mess, he has his reasons for doing what he does. But you're probably right. There are, he might have been, the thing is, you know, if you have in a thriller in chapter one, if the main character decides to just call the police and tell them to solve it, the book's very short.
Indeed so. Now, your stock in trade, I suppose, is to have extraordinary things happen to ordinary people. I mean, your characters are not superheroes.
No, far from it. And I've always liked to do that because, I mean, I love, as I've probably told you before, a Jack Reacher thriller by Lee Child as much as anybody, but I'm never worried for Reacher. I'm just worried about all the people he's going to meet because he's just going to beat the daylights out of them. And I like to write about people who have, who are in no way prepared to deal with the kind of people they're going to run into. And I think, well, what do I know about being an ex-CIA guy or a cop or anything like that? I know what it's like to be, you know, a reporter or, you know, friends of ours, you know, like a teacher or a car salesman, yeah, or a landscaper. I know what those people, what their lives are like. And I think, well, how would they handle it if they are up against evil? What are they going to do? And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the readers identify with the characters in the books and why they have taken to them.
Now, it's not a spoiler to tell our listeners that Richard Boyle is a teacher in a fairly typical American school where, sadly, something that's all too typical of American schools begins to unfold.
Yeah, it's not as you might expect with so often is the case in U.S. schools. It's not a shooting, but a former student shows up with a kind of dynamite vest attached to himself with intent to walk into the school and cause a lot of harm. And our character, Richard, while this situation ends tragically, it could have been much, much worse. And Richard is hailed as, our teacher Richard is hailed as something of a hero, but that notoriety brings unfortunate results in which a one-time student, a former student, alleges misdeeds on his behalf that he could, you know, he did in the past, and says, people think you're a big hero? Well, wait if they were to find out the things that you really did. And, you know, did Richard really do these things or not? And is he better off to pay off a blackmailer, even if he's innocent? Because, you know, it's like if you're a teacher, even a hint of, yeah, the kind of accusations that this person's leveling, that's the end of a career. It's over.
And that's the point. Everything is judged not by the fact, but in the court of public opinion.
Exactly. We live in a world now where everyone has in their phone has a little movie camera and can catch moments of your life completely out of context. And you will be judged by those moments when there's, you know, it's an explanation. There are things that happened before and there are things that happened after, but nobody cares about that. They see what they see, and that can be the end of you.
And of course, the stakes are high because he is concerned not only for his own fate, but effectively the fate of his nearest and dearest as well, should anything happen that would, as the title suggests, ruin him.
Exactly. I mean, Richard is, you know, he and his wife have a young daughter. His wife is a school principal, And so if he's afraid to tell her the allegations, because first of all, you know, is she going to believe that he didn't do these things? But also, if she is then knows what he is alleged to have done, and if he doesn't come forward, is her role in jeopardy? Is her career in jeopardy? You know, if he goes down, she's going to go with him. And so Richard keeps trying to solve this problem on his own and resolve this situation. And the harder he tries, the worse things get.
Inevitably.
Well, you know, that's
there are all sorts of other themes running through this, which is about middle Americana and the things that we do see and hear reported from parts of the United States. For example, parents getting upset about the choice of books that Richard, yeah, as an English lit teacher, might be introducing his students to.
Yeah, Richard Richard thinks that, with good reason, that a lot of kids today are not going to have the patience to, you know, wade through A Tale of Two Cities or this or that. And he thinks, well, how can I get kids reading and get them involved and kind of get them where they live? And he thinks, why not teach them a Pulitzer Prize winning novel like The Road by Cormac McCarthy? And for kids who've been devouring things like The Last of Us and The Walking Dead, this book's going to, they're going to gravitate towards it, but it's also an opportunity to be introducing all sorts of moral issues and lots of things that they can discuss. The only problem is The Road is not on the school curriculum properly. And there are moments in that book, including cannibalism, that are pretty graphic and pretty horrifying. And when one of the kids is a little bit, you know, upset by it, and then the parents find out, and suddenly you've practically got the folks gathering with the torches and the pitchforks as to why are you teaching this? And of course, the reaction sometimes is, you know, when you're teaching a book that includes depictions of cannibalism, some are going to say, well, isn't that great? The schools are now endorsing cannibalism. Now, that's really not Cormac McCarthy's intention, you know, but it's a tough world out there. And as Richard says sometime, you know, when he's in the midst of this mess, he says, maybe we should just teach the timetables and the state capitals and send them on their merry way and never give them anything to read or talk about that is in any way challenging. Because if you do, you know, there's no book out there that is worth reading that won't offend somebody.
Sure. When you recount all of this, and, you know, it's not based on specific incidents, but it's based on the generality of some of the directions in which parts of America are going, and yeah, the pressure that teachers feel, they're under-resourced, number one, every action they take is under scrutiny. And you wonder, is there any salvation, really, for schools and teachers at the end of the day, if America keeps going like it is?
Well, I think it's one of the toughest jobs. And I think that teachers, and not just in the U.S., but pretty much everywhere, are underappreciated and undervalued and under attack. And I think the reason you stick with it is because you really love kids and you have this hope that in some way, somehow, that you will be able to make a difference for some of them. But it's a tough gig. And I mean, and in the U.S., it's like, well, you don't have enough textbooks and you don't have enough resources and you're not paid enough, but we'd be more than happy to supply all of you with guns in case somebody comes into the class to try to kill you. I mean, imagine living and working under those kind of conditions. And so I think it's really, really tough.
Some of the other themes that run through the book, I mean, this is not all school-centered, I hasten to add.
No.
It becomes a helter-skelter adventure at the end of the whole thing with a denouement, which is terrifying. But other themes that run through it, the fact that people that you would trust to do an ordinary job, like someone who's handling baggage in an airport, might abuse that fairly lowly paid job, but might abuse that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's astonishingly, Richard's tangles with a possible blackmailer and all these other things are also going to intersect with drug smugglers who are bringing in from Mexico fentanyl, which is a highly destructive, terrible, terrible drug. And we've got a guy who works in a small regional airport, and he's the guy who unloads the bags, and he knows what bags to pick off and, you know, get hidden away in a hurry because he's the one who's helping bring this stuff into the country. This gentleman also has some other financial troubles, and we're starting to wonder whether his solution to his financial troubles has something to do with blackmailing a teacher. And so Richard's in a mess. He's in such a mess. But it's true. There's an awful lot going on. There's a lot of different plots, and everything kind of comes to a head towards the end where a lot of these things are all going to intersect. And as you say, it does have does build to quite a conclusion.
It's extraordinary that, I mean, you live in Canada, and in spite of having a very long border, probably 3,000 miles long with the United States, it doesn't seem to be infected in the same way with the problems of the United States. I'm not sure. Is there an opioid problem in Canada?
Not to the same degree. Canada, I think it was Robin Williams who once said that Canada, living in Canada, is living upstairs above a crack house. or a meth lab, you know, something like that. And we have, there's a lot of things that are real serious problems south of the border that we don't face, but we're not immune from problems either. I mean, we have our own set of problems, but not to the same degree. I mean, we have, you know, we don't have the kind of a gun culture that they have in the States. We don't have a Second Amendment where you have a right to own a gun and so forth. We have nothing like that. It doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of guns smuggled across the border. And the number of shootings in Toronto, where I live, is up about 50% this year. So, you know, we still have problems, but there are a lot of things that occupy a lot of time and trouble south of the border that aren't really an issue here. I mean, gay marriage has been legal in Canada for longer than I can remember. I have within about a 10-minute walk of my house, there's like six different cannabis shops. There are some things that we just aren't as vexed about. And that last line may now spark tourism here very quickly. I don't know, but but it's very different here.
Yeah. Now, back in 2016, I'm sure you and I were talking at that time as Trump was in the White House and entering the White House. And there was talk of many Americans abandoning their home country for the sanctity and safety of Canada. Are we seeing any such moves again with the possible arrival of a second Trump presidency?
Well, I know that at that time, a lot of people were sending emails to me saying, "Can we come in and move in with you?" And I said, "Take a number," not to the same degree. Now, I think in the last 10 days, I think for the first time in a very long time, there's this faint sliver of hope going on now with Joe Biden deciding to step back and Kamala Harris stepping forward. There's this glimmer of hope. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. But all those things affect us, you know, if Trump gets back, it'll certainly have impacts here. It'll probably also encourage and embolden sort of the MAGA types in Canada who, you know, are enamored of him, and they may gain in support. So it's going to be a very interesting time between now and November.
Yeah. Anyway, the mantra in Canada should not be "make Canada great again," but rather "keep Canada as great as it is."
That's right. There's like everybody's talking about willing to build a wall between Canada or between the U.S. and Mexico. And there's times when I think maybe we need one. We'll just run right along, you know, start building in Saskatchewan and run it over to Nova Scotia. I don't know.
You're probably already well on the way to the publication of the follow-up to "I Will Ruin You," and I'm wondering what particular North American trope are you wrestling with for the next one?
Oh, well, this is a great question. Well, I believe we'll have two books next year. And the first one, which will be sort of late spring, is going to be a bit of a departure, little sort of supernatural horror. My goal is to do for toy trains what Chucky did for dolls with the first book this year. But the second one, I think, may touch a nerve with some people. Now, I don't know if they have this phrase, you know, where you are, but we deal in downtown Toronto and a lot of places with what we call porch pirates. And I don't order anything from Amazon to have delivered to the house, to have it sit on the front step, because by the time I get there, it'll be gone. There are people who even follow the delivery trucks, and when something gets delivered on somebody's step, they hop out and grab it. So I've done a second novel for that come out later next year that I have, at least at the moment, tentatively titled Pirate. And because it's a rampant problem. Even you go online, you'll find stories of people who now will leave packages on their front step that are filled with soiled cat litter so that whoever steals it will have a nice little surprise.
Yeah. Well, my porch pirate is, I think, a fox. When I when we get deliveries of milk at our house, occasionally when we don't protect the milk in advance, the fox has it.
Well, my daughter did an Uber Eats McDonald's order to her door the other morning. And by the time she opened it, there was a squirrel eating her hash brown. So I feel your pain.
All right. Well, Linwood, it's great talking to you once again. And I can thoroughly recommend your latest book in all good bookshops. I Will Ruin You, it's called. And it's a thriller from start to finish. Linwood, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Pat. Thanks for having me.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.